Well, just going back over the course of the past week, not a lot more in terms of data out of the US. You know, we've got some of the readings actually are doing better than I would have thought, you know, given that you've got big states like California going back into lockdowns for a period. But, you know, this could be just a function of, you know, we're getting close to the change of presidency now. And on top of that, you know, we're also getting mighty close to widespread distribution of vaccines in the United States too. You know, it's already started in the UK, and it starts in the US, starting almost immediately. So it could be just those factors which are just giving a bit of optimism that's carrying still. And the number that surprised me most was actually the December Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey. It came out on Friday, and it lifted. The market thought that one would come down into mid or low 70s. It was at 76.9. It went up to 81.4. So it's actually a pretty positive sign looking ahead for what's going to be happening in terms of consumer spending. Some of the other readings, very little bit last week, a little bit worrying on initial jobless claims, that creeping up again on a weekly basis. The most recent week, has gone all the way back up to 853,000 from 716,000. So that's where you can see the effect of some of these new lockouts just starting to compromise labour market improvement running through the United States. And the only other data we had of any note last week out of the US was producer prices and the CPI. And they both came in more or less where expected, you know, sort of 0.1 to 0.2% month on month for each of them. And the November producer price index annual change is only 0.8%. And for the headline, CPI is only 1.2%. So there's nothing showing in terms of inflation lift in those. And we wouldn't expect that anyway because we've still got a fair bit of excess capacity running through the U.S. This week in the US, we'll get some more leading indicators, some of those regional manufacturing indicators coming out of New York State on Tuesday night and also out of the Philadelphia area going later in the week. Last month, they were a bit patchy. They came back a bit. The Empire State one, the New York State one for December is expected to lift a touch to 6.8 from 6.3. The Philadelphia Fed one, which comes out later in the week, that one's expected to hold up. That was actually quite good going back to November at 26.3. It is expected to come back a little, but not much, to about 19. 19 is actually still a pretty respectable reading as far as that indicator is concerned. We've also got December readings of manufacturing purchasing managers' indices for both the manufacturing sector, the services sector, and also the housing sector. And so for the manufacturing PMI coming out on Wednesday night, looking at that, just edging back a touch from 56.7 to 55.8, still reasonably respectable reading. The services sector PMI, which had a big lift going back the month before to 58.4, is expected to drop to 55 because you've got a lot of areas in hospitality which happened to shut down again because of the restrictions for the time being. National Association of Home Builders Index, too, would be worth watching. That one went to a record high of 90 going back to November. Market expects it to come back to 88, but you know, if it holds at 88, it's still a very, very high reading. So you know, the housing sector is still looking pretty good, and we should get some confirmation of that later in the week too, where we get housing starts and housing permits coming out. Housing starts are expected to be flat after being up 4.9% going back the month before, but they are at a very, very high and record level. And housing permits, they drifted down 0.1% going back to October, expected to lift by 0.4% in November. So really, you know, the housing sector is still holding together very, very well indeed on the back of very, very low mortgage rates. Of course, the other big event this week was two, actually. We got even later today, the Electoral College meets, and that will be the final ratification of the election result. And so, you know, after today, there is nowhere that Trump can go. You know, people can protest as much as they like in the streets of Washington, but the election will be done and dusted after the Electoral College votes that occurs later today. And it's just waiting through to inauguration when the president moves out of the White House. But we have the FOMC decision too. The Fed meets on Wednesday, Thursday. we'll get their latest forecasts of interest rates, and basically the Fed forecasts of interest rates are no change over the next 3 years. Very, very low rates persisting. We don't expect to see any change in the official interest rate, but yeah, the Fed will continue to assert that it will do whatever it takes to keep the recovery going. So still, you know, sort of reaffirmation of very, very easy monetary policy. Moving to China, and despite all the problems that, you know, we're having with China trade, some of the key export prices, which are driven by Chinese economic growth, continue to run to record highs. In amongst those, yeah, we've got the iron ore price, which has run all the way up to $160 a ton. Yeah, nobody, even a few months ago, would have expected anything as strong as that. Also, the LNG price has really picked up a lot over the last few months, and they're our biggest and second biggest exports these days, and China's not touching those because it needs them. And you can see why when you look at the data that came out of China last week. The leading part of growth running through China, well, actually, exports have been running very, very well out of China. So we had November exports came out. They were expected to be up by 12%. They rose by 21.1%. So other people still need China's manufacturers. And in turn, that's leading back to industrial production in China. And it's later this week, you know, we get the November readings of fixed asset investment spending, industrial production, retail sales out of China. The one that's probably going to, you know, grab the headlines is going to be industrial production, which managed to hold up better than all the others going back a month ago at 6.9% year on year. It's expected to improve a bit further to 7. Now, that's a very strong growth rate for industrial production out of China. Together with exports running into manufacturing, running into industrial production, yeah, this is what's driving a better than expected pickup in Chinese economic growth at the moment. And of course, it's having a reverberation back to some pretty key prices as far as we're concerned as well. So it's a pretty important one, watching those numbers when they come out. Fixed asset investment spending in China is also lifting. And the November reading coming out later this week is expected to lift to 2.6% year on year from 1.8%. Retail sales, finally getting a bit of momentum in those too, and it's expected they'll lift to 5.1% year-on-year from 4.3% the month before. So all told, you know, China's economic recovery, notwithstanding its arguments with the rest of the world, is going pretty well. Coming to Australia, and the numbers we got last week, there weren't that many of them, but boy, you know, they're looking very, very constructive. Further lift in economic activity. We had ANZ job ads came out at the very beginning of the month, the monthly survey there from the ANZ. These have been rising very strongly over the last couple of months. So going back a month ago, there was an 11.9% month-on-month lift, and it was followed up by another 13.9% lift for the latest month. So they've lifted something like about 60% off their base going back to the bottom of the recession. And it suggests that, you know, there's a lot of jobs that can't be filled at the moment, which in turn is driving much stronger than expected employment growth. So that's coming through very, very powerfully at the moment. We had the ABS survey of third quarter house prices, and it showed that in Q3, pretty old data, you know, this is going back to Q3 now, but it showed that house prices quarter on quarter lifted by 0.8% after being down by 1.8% quarter on quarter the quarter before. You know, it had five consecutive quarters of negative house price growth, so we've finally come out of that. And of course, when we get the Q4 numbers, they're going to be a lot more powerful than 0.8%, because we've seen some pretty big readings coming out of the CoreLogic monthly readings for house prices over the last month or two. We also had the NAB Business Survey, Westpac Consumer Sentiment Surveys came out last week. The NAB one was for November. And business confidence had one of its biggest jumps on record. It lifted to plus 12 from plus 5. Business conditions also had a huge lift from plus 1 to plus 9. So we're starting to see confidence lifting pretty strongly, running through the business sector. But nothing compared with consumer sentiment. Consumer sentiment is now running at 7 to 8 year highs. And the latest Westpac Consumer Sentiment Survey had another 4.1% month-on-month lift after a 2.5% lift the month before. So we are running at pretty close to, as I say, 8 year highs for the Westpac Consumer Sentiment Survey. And that suggests that, you know, we've got a lot more spending coming through as far as the household sector is concerned. This week in Australia, we've got a few things happening. We've got the minutes from the RBA meeting. There'll be the usual assessment in that of what they discussed at the RBA meeting. That is that, you know, things are going better than they expected. You know, they reinforced that when they brought out the quarterly monetary policy statement and lifted their GDP forecasts. But they'll also be saying that, you know, they have to keep things very, very easy for the time being. There's a number of reasons for that. One is that, you know, there's still some uncertainty about the economic outlook, even though things are almost religiously coming in better than expected at the moment. They still pay lip service to that. Second one is that, yeah, they have to at least recognise what's happening with other central banks. Other central banks are pursuing very easy monetary conditions. They can't afford to be the odd man out, and they'll be watching with a weather eye on the appreciating Australian dollar, which continues to lift. And they really won't want to see that going too much higher. All those factors, I think, will be there in the RBA minutes. On Thursday, two things on Thursday. We'll get the mid-year economic and financial outlook from Commonwealth Treasury. This is, you know, revision to their economic forecasts and their budget forecasts. It's only a very short distance after the budget this year because the budget was delayed until the 6th of October. So we've only been 10 weeks since the budget. But what's interesting is in just that very short space of time, there's been a lot of improvement relative to what Treasury was forecasting. So some of their key economic forecasts are going to be revised up quite a bit, even though they only brought the budget out 10 weeks ago. So, for example, you know, the 2021 GDP forecast in the budget was minus 1.5%. It wouldn't surprise to see that being revised up to nearer to zero. So that's a huge revision, upward revision. Similarly, the unemployment rate forecast in the budget was 7.25% for June next year. Wouldn't surprise to see that being reduced by about half percentage point. Their estimates of commodity prices they had in the budget are just so far away from what's happened, it's not funny. They've got $100 a tonne for iron ore prices factored into the budget. It's currently $160 a tonne. So, yeah, that makes a huge difference to company tax receipts. So some of the things, when it came out, there was that shock and horror that we were going to run a $213 billion budget deficit for 2020-21. That's going to get revised down sub $200 billion. So already there's a significant improvement in the budget deficit forecast, and it's largely to do with the economic parameters, the key ones, GDP growth and the unemployment rate, but also things like the commodity prices, which are running way better than they anticipated. So that'll be worth watching when that comes out. But also on the same day, we get the latest labour force report. And going back a month ago, we had that extraordinary position where the average market consensus forecast for employment was minus 30,000. And we ended up getting plus 178,000. I'm not saying it'll be quite as far away from market forecast this time. The market forecast is plus 50,000 for the current month. But I think there's a fair chance it's going to be a lot more than plus 50,000. And so, we already had the participation rate almost back to pre-COVID levels, where it lifted a long way up to 65.8%. That may lift a bit further towards 66%. But the unemployment rate, which was at 7% going back last month, may come down, and it may come down a fair way in that reading. So again, another one of those factors that, you know, these forecasts have been out there for 7 and 8% unemployment rates for the middle of next year are way off the mark. And, you know, that's something that's obviously going to be recognised in that mid-year economic and financial outlook. In terms of Europe last week, again, Europe's going through pretty a hell of a time in terms of COVID-19 as well. But the numbers are still coming in better than where you might expect them to be. So we had the December Centix Investor Confidence Survey. It was at minus 10 going back to November. Market thought it improved slightly to minus 8.3. It improved to minus 2.7, so it's pretty significant improvement on what they expected. The ZEW Economic Sentiment Survey for Europe too came out for December. That was at 32.8 going back to November. Was expected to lift slightly to 37.5. It lifted to 54.4. So there's a fair bit of optimism building, even in Europe where COVID and restrictions are actually increasing. We have an ECB meeting. We had an ECB meeting last week. There was no change in monetary policy there. So they left all their key rates unchanged, and they're still very, very supportive for what has to happen. The talks between the UK and Europe, which were supposed to have ended today, have actually been extended further. There's some hope on that, the UK can still broker some sort of deal on what customs come into position when they fall out of the EU. If it no deal is brokered, they go back to the pre-1974 position, then that means customs checkpoints everywhere, including on the Channel Tunnel. It's just the inefficiency of that. The delays are going to be enormous when people try to go from Britain to Europe and Europe back to Britain. That's the issue that they're trying to resolve, and with the Brexit agreement. In Europe this week, they have industrial production data coming out later today. That's expected to improve a bit, coming out up about 2% after being down 0.4%. They also have manufacturing PMI and services PMI coming out. These should come back a bit, given what's happening in Europe, but they may not. So the manufacturing PMI is expected to come back to 53 from 53.8. Wouldn't surprise if that doesn't improve. And the services sector PMI expects to come back to 41 from 41.7. But broadly speaking, the story around the world is that we're still getting this improvement running through confidence and expectations about what's going to happen next. It's going to be reinforced really now that we're starting to get into the run of vaccines being wheeled out, so that's certainly going to be helpful. The policy prescription is still enormously supportive of economic growth. We're getting some signs that growth is running through way faster than expected. It's noticeably so here in Australia. It's still a very, very constructive position for risk assets. Some of these look very, very overvalued. But if we end up with economic forecasts which run way stronger than expected, then where should the valuations be, particularly when you're setting that against central banks, which are going to leave interest rate structures extraordinarily low for a very protracted period?